people go to a casino and somebody's rolling loaded dice. Why is there a tendency towards, what do you say, negativity?
I said discontent.
Discontent, okay. So let's say that a tendency towards discontent would be something like the dice is loaded in favor of not the customer. It's loaded.
Yeah, and I think on it, and I look back, and a lot of it I think is conditioning. Things I've been sort of trained by things, primarily the television, before I really saw what a television was doing to my...
Television.
And I don't look at TV anymore. It's actually a disturbance in the force, if you will.
Wow. But what a brilliant decision.
Yeah. And even media. You know, I worked in the media for 24 years, and at that time I was very enamored of it, addicted to it even, and I would read newspapers every day, at least listen to the radio and watch the news on TV, and boy, it does not make you feel good. But you know, I didn't recognize perhaps the connection between those times. But it's quite addicting. It's an addictive thing. But the whole media is set up to make a person feel inadequate unless they buy the products that are being advertised during the media.
It makes the public feel what?
Inadequate. Yeah.
And the only way to become adequate is get that product, right?
To purchase some object that will make you better. So they picture these pretty fantastical imagery, you know, that's nowhere close to what reality.
Yeah.
So imagine yourself driving down the highway in a blue BMW convertible,
yeah,
350, you know, or whatever it is, and they present it as this Eden, right? It's glorious. If only you had our product.
Yeah.
And for years, I bought into that. Not a conscious decision to buy into that. I'm sorry. I'm just going to push ignore here. I bought into that and did not realize that that was setting kind of a foundation of never being content with what is.
You know, it's amazing, too. I'll call them they, actually say that children are not influenced by gory, bloodthirsty video. Now, is that a little hard to believe?
I can't imagine how it would not be so. I mean, how can you look at something over and over and over again, even if it's a comic, you know, because they say, oh, it's just a cartoon. But even in the most G-rated cartoons, you know, a Bugs Bunny type cartoon, what do you really see?
Yeah.
Gore and violence.
In connection with a bunny rap.
Yes.
How could anything be wrong with it?
And then, you know, I can follow that back to the roots. You know, the root of evil isn't money, but it's the desire for money, the greed over money. There's nothing harmful about money. There's nothing wrong with having money or making money. It's that greed, that want. I must have money because I need to get my new BMW, because if I don't get my new BMW, I'm not going to be happy. It's the only way I can be happy.
Yeah. So if you follow the recommendations of a huge section of the world and society in America right now, he would say, I'll explain why, if you follow their belief system in one area and apply it to money, it doesn't hold water. Because, let's say, if money is the root of evil, then the solution should be to get rid of money. Do you ever hear anybody talking about getting rid of money? Not at all. But they'll admit it's the root of all evil. Now, okay, how many evils come under the list of all evil? Just about everything.
How much all is all?
Yeah. All evil. So you solve all the problems just by eliminating money.
Could we?
Before money, there was a system of barter, you know?
Yeah.
Before money. But then they'll say bartering. Bartering was the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm. But in itself, it's not. It's. I wonder sometimes if bartering wouldn't make us a little bit more content overall, because look, this marketing directly to people, I mean, they spend millions and millions of dollars to catch an audience who has been kind of lulled into a sense of semi-hypnosis
Hypnosis.
So they can barrage them with these images of this is what you need. You need, and you don't even know this is happening to you. While you're skimming through the advertisements in a magazine, the glossy photos of the beautiful people. And it's so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And we do it to ourselves on purpose.
I like the way you said that. We do it to ourselves because, there's some kind of a, idea out there that some people are more susceptible to hypnosis and that the hypnotist decides whether somebody gets hypnotized, but not the hypnotized person.
Right.
Is not responsible at all, you know. The hypnotist did it, you know.
Right, right. I love to lay off, everything is everybody else's fault.
Yeah.
You know, I'll sit there in my funk saying, oh man, if only the world was, if only reality was a different thing than it is.
Yeah. And then people nowadays, a lot of people with mental health diagnoses, they use the diagnoses now to eliminate responsibility. I have PTSD, and so this is my disability. This is why I behave this way, or I am a drug addict. How about that? I mean, I am a drug addict. There's probably more in that field, in an industry of people, at least declining to blame other people for being a drug addict. But it could be done, though.
Sure. And my tendency is to do it. It's an avoidance of reality that I have chosen the seat that I am in. In one way or another, I have chosen the seat that I sit. And the only real tool I have to make any difference in thing is my attitude toward it.
Your attitude, yeah. And what if your attitude is a result of being hypnotized?
There you go. So, well, that darn hypnotist again.
Yeah, that hypnotist did it. And what if your attitude was not determined by the hypnotist, but by your perception of reality? Okay, and then you say, well, my perception of reality caused me to have this attitude, which led me to do this horrible thing, and I'm sorry for it, you know?
And that's precisely what we do.
It just goes on and on and on.
At what point do we say, I am responsible?
Yeah, yeah.
At what point? And when do we do that? I think we've talked about having the magic button before. Where if I could just push this button and go right to that spot, instead of my constant, saying the word tendency again, my tendency to go back to the well of despair and draw a cup. This horrible reality that doesn't match what I wish it would be, and these people for making it so and keeping me from being able to. The story of my life. Why I cannot be content.
There's something like allergic to being empowered and to be taking responsibility. It seems like being responsible would be something that would be a disaster. But actually, what has led people to think that being responsible is a disaster? It is the greatest thing that can happen to a person is that they have power over their lives.
Yes.
And that they are responsible for their own lives.
Yes. It's just some fear, and I'm not sure where the fear stems, but it's some fear of possibilities. I don't have that phone. Somebody rests really. But I'm not sure where that fear comes from.
Yeah. So let's say that someone convinced you that your worst enemy was your mother, okay? That would be tough for you growing up and all that, you know? So what if you were convinced before you learned to fear your mother, let's say before then you learned to fear responsibility?
Don't want to be responsible for whatever reason.
And you learned to be afraid of responsibility, which is the greatest friend you could ever have is... proud being and wanting responsibility and wanting to be recognized as competent instead of incompetent.
And then my fear of being responsible keeps me from being responsible because I'm afraid of it. So then I'm unhappy and I complain that I'm unhappy.
And again, somebody else made you unhappy, right?
Yes, and it's not because I chose not to be responsible.
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid of being responsible.
Yeah. Now we're talking about, you want to check your phone?
Well, I'm curious.
Yeah.
It's probably, my son, Jonathan, the older son, called me last week and informed me. I haven't talked to him for months.
Uh-huh.
He's the one who was sort of quasi-poisoned against me. And he called me out of the blue when we returned home from major surgery. He's now carrying a colostomy bag and waiting for the surgery to put his stomach back.
Oh.
Yeah, it's quite awful. But I'm going to use it. He reached out to me, so I'm going to use it as an up, have a relationship.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm glad he finally called. He had recovered at his mother's house, and as soon as he left his mother's house and went back to his place, called. So I said, I'm going to call him after this, and we're going to hook up today. And,
good, good.
Yeah, it will be nice to see
him. So that goes right along with what we're talking about. So if he, cut you off based on the idea that you were at fault for something, of course, it had nothing to do with him, right?
Right. Right.
It was your doing that led him to cut you off. Okay. He did nothing. I mean, otherwise, why would he cut you off if he was... If you're the culprit and he's innocent, then he would have to cut you off, right? So he would have no responsibility, you know, because you're, like, incorrigible, you're unsalvageable.
Right.
So you have to be cut off. Like a stomach or something.
Right. Oh, and now his stomach had cut out of his stomach.
Yeah, yeah. And so if he could possibly link, things going on physically with something going on spiritually, that could be a big help.
Yeah. And he described it as, Dad, this is a life-altering event. I thought to myself, sure sounds like going to the hospital and having somebody cut you open.
Yeah.
Pretty life-altering.
And what about being cut open could lead him to want to, like, get back in touch with his father? What could be a connection there?
Wow.
We should cut open more stomachs, I guess, out there, you know?
Well, and is it not how the universe works? It keeps pointing me in the direction that I really ought to be going. Whether I recognize it or not, whether I take responsibility for it or not, is up to me, and I frequently do or don't. I frequently don't because I'm generally afraid. However, when I am responsible, when I can get into that place where I'm responsible, that's where I find joy. That's where I find happiness. That's where I find all these things that really are byproducts of that being responsible.
We're onto something here. Yeah, I mean, converting someone to, like, seeking responsibility instead of avoiding it could be a life change development. Seeking responsibility and taking responsibility for one's own life. You would think that who would want somebody else to be responsible for their life?
Right.
You know, why would anyone want anyone else to be responsible for their life? You know?
Well, and the only thing I can think of in response is so that I don't have to take responsibility for where I am. But that's a circular thing.
Yeah, because you could blame them for poor behavior, for being irresponsible with the responsibility that you gave to them
right.
for their lives. So you come off like smelling like a rose then, you know?
And I wonder why I want an excuse to be able to be miserable.
Let's say you've been hypnotized. You know?
Well, and that's where we started.
Yeah.
I think we have... inadvertently, of course, nobody would choose this. If they could see the whole picture all at once, we wouldn't choose, oh, I think I'm going to have a miserable life. You just wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But we slid into it inadvertently, almost.
If you buy this car, you will be happy. So I went and bought the car, and after like a few thousand miles, I discovered I was still unhappy.
Yeah, now I needed a new garage.
I didn't get the right car, or I got to listen to a different commercial next time.
Uh-huh. Now I need a new wife to go with the car.
Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't the car. It was my marriage, you know.
Right, and that is pointing responsibility outside of yourself, isn't it? Isn't that where, coming back to the responsibility, that's saying... because this car wasn't satisfactory, I will be unhappy. I'm unhappy with things. I'm discontent because I did what I was supposed to do.
I was advised to get that car on good authority, the television set.
And look at this. All of a sudden, I was content for a moment there as I was driving the car off the lot. But then something else came up that I needed that... before I could be content. It's that avoidance of responsibility. Let me ask this. Is our primary purpose, if such a thing exists, not to be responsible for ourselves, for our own, where we are?
It depends which master we're following. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. This I heard. There's only two masters. Let's say, and you can call it personal, like God and the devil, or impersonal, like good and evil. And I don't know. I don't even know if it makes that much difference, but I kind of like the idea of good and evil as the two masters. But they could be personifications, all kinds of personifications of good, like Saint Francis, who inspired the new pope to name his himself by Francis. So there's good and evil. So evil would be like I guess Hitler. He would be a personification of evil or an agent of evil. But it wouldn't be his fault because he was just following the dictates of evil or the devil or something. It wasn't his fault. The devil made him do it, okay?
Mm-hmm. And in many ways, that's true. I can buy into that kind of that thinking. That really, you know, even Hitler didn't want to be thought of as he is thought of throughout history.
He was under the devil's hypnosis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It wasn't his fault. Is he really responsible?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, just I heard on the TV just the other, yeah, maybe this morning actually, the girl who's being on trial, you know, ad nauseatum for like cutting her boyfriend into bits,
ew,
shooting him and slicing his throat and
oh my,
cutting him up. I don't know,
but that's not her fault.
No, because now, after the prosecuting attorney like tore her to shreds in her testimony, a psychiatrist now has evaluated her, and he's coming up with a diagnosis for her behavior. Mm-hmm. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She's probably depressed and ADHD and ADD and post-traumatic stress disorder, at least those.
Yeah, so he's trying to take responsibility away from her by saying it was somebody else's fault.
Whenever I don't like the situation I'm in, it's somebody else's fault.
Yeah, yeah. And she's claiming, though, that she only killed him because he was coming to harm her. But then after she killed him, she forgot what was going on. She lost track of herself. She doesn't remember slicing him up and all that after she shot him, slashing his throat.
I'm so glad I haven't read this story. Yeah. It sounds horrible. Yeah. Just horrible.
So now this is all explainable because of her diagnosis now. So this should be very interesting because what we're talking about is going on like forever now, everywhere. This whole subject of responsibility and irresponsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you were saying something about how all this started, because do we choose to be hypnotized in the negative sense or the positive sense?
All right.
So let's say, I was thinking when you said that the some people feel like the programming and conditioning of the human mind occurs intrauterine. Mm-hmm. Before the baby's even born.
Sure.
The baby is subjected to an environment, like the mother is like being traumatized, or the mother is depressed, or the mother is happy, mm-hmm, or the mother is listening to Mozart, or listening to Jimi Hendrix, I don't know what, you know.
Sure, sure. And the whole school of parents who have gone to great works in making sure that they play good music, soothing music to the big belly of the mother as she grows,
yeah,
as the child grows in her womb.
So now we want to condition that child to grow up to, like, well, whatever music the mother prefers, I guess.
Yeah.
And then when he's born and he gets into trouble at a certain age, then this new scientist that will come out and say his genetic makeup came from his mother, which came from her mother, which came from his grandfather, and he was just born with this bad deal.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
The avoidance of responsibility.
And we're helping this out. We're helping each other either to absolve everyone of every sense of responsibility or to excuse everyone for everything.
Yes, you know? Yes.
And there's nothing in between.
So, why? Why?
Now, between God and the devil, which one would want us to like feel empowered to know that we have jurisdiction over what we do with the life that we're given? The devil or God?
That would be God.
God would want us to know that.
That would be the good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the devil would want us to believe that we're victims.
Right.
And then, and since we're with victims, we have to like do something about it. We have to find somebody to blame. Okay. And talk about a tendency for discontent. You said that, right?
Yes. The tendency towards discontent.
Yeah.
Or in my new Latin words, my phraseology for that is chronicus malcontentitis. That's what perfect. I call that.
Yeah.
Chronicus Malcontentitis.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully the new Pope will do something.
He'll address that.
Yeah. Whole thing.
Pope Francis, please. Would you write a new encyclical on Chronicus Malcontentitis? Yeah.
Please. But a lot of people are very hopeful now because he's gone by the name of Francis. Wow. And some people think that this is a tremendously promising note. Hmm. That the new Pope has named himself after Francis.
Francis, yes. He was the one who talked with the animals.
He talked with the animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a very pleasant fellow.
So now we're kind of moving towards a positive hypnosis. Okay. The new Pope has named himself Francis. You know, now the stock market is going up now. People are traveling to Italy now and Argentina now, you know.
Italy, Argentina, the climate change has slowed. Oh, heaven.
Yeah, so, but from what I gather, though, there's no way around hypnosis. And like human beings really don't have an in into how all this started, so they're kind of like, they don't get like a first run of news of how creation came about.
Right.
So everything from then on is hearsay for us, you know. So we don't know what to read, what to believe, and we can switch back and forth. If we listen to everything, we'll end up like being totally catatonic.
You know? Yeah, except I've heard and read that through time there have been individuals who came through all of that mess.
Yeah.
And became short term for it as enlightened. A lot of those very rare individuals who become enlightened say very similar things about what is, about that basic knowledge of really what did happen or what is at least now is all one and the same. And I would love to know that mind. I mean, to have that full content of my own self.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, last night at JCC, Dr. Eben Alexander gave a talk for which no one could attend because it was they overfilled the auditorium at JCC.
Oh,
yeah, Eben Alexander wrote a book called Proof of Heaven, and he's a successful neurosurgeon in the Midwest somewhere. I don't know, Missouri or somewhere.
Okay,
and some time ago, a year or so, he didn't wake up for 8 days, and they examined him, hospitalized, intubated him. Brain scanned him, and they discovered that his cortex was completely destroyed. And they were like thinking about when he needed to be like cut off from all the life support and just buried.
Yeah,
you know, 8 days, you know, in a coma, no known cause. I think they decided probably that he was suffering from like spontaneous meningitis or something. You know?
Right.
And so his whole brain was shot. So 8 days later, he awakened and he says, "Where am I?" And they tell him where he is, and I guess it took him a few days to orient himself. And then, on maybe the 2 weeks later, he seems to become re-engaged with everything that happened to him while he was in the coma. And he writes a 20,000-word essay on his trip to heaven.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And from then on, he went from being a skeptic about afterlife and death and life and death, to being now a total believer, not only a total believer, but now he's an eyewitness reporter on life after death in heaven.
And it's so wonderful that he wants to convert other people.
Yeah, and he's now all totally on that side now. And there was standing room only at JCC last night. No one could get in.
Wow.
Just because there was so much like advertisements that he's coming and he's going to talk about near-death experiences. So I actually went down there to get in. I couldn't get in. And I saw, like, everyone I saw at the door, like, really sad because they couldn't get in. We're like, over, they looked like they're over age 90. Like, this is the greatest thing they could have, someone telling them, what is life and death, finally, you know?
Yes.
Somebody who was there.
Yes.
And they couldn't get in the door, you know? You never saw anybody so sad, you know?
So ironic, but that's what we're all looking for, is
like, tell me what is going on here,
you know?
I'm 90 years old now, and I don't know what's going on, and I'm about to, like, graduate, you know?
Right, and I haven't been able to prepare for it,
yeah,
because nobody really
I'm not
knows.
Ready for this.
All I've got is hearsay.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and the cars, there were cars, you couldn't even park it, like, in New Jersey, you know?
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll have to talk about that.
And he's going to talk tonight in Phoenix tonight again. Tonight.
Do they record these?
I mean, they're going to have a video.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I'd like to see that.
That's
fascinating.
Yeah.
It's that truth. What was the truth that Buddha felt and knew and was conscious and aware of when he pointed his finger to the earth and said, "This is my witness.
I see it now."
You know. Boom. Everything is it kind of explained in one breath.
So you could say that the experience was so wonderful that he became like Buddha, you might say, where, let's say, it's like, if I have to be under hypnosis, I realize I am in charge of which hypnosis I will be under. Okay, so I will go all out in believing that there is a God and that the universe is basically good and that it's better to be a positive than negative, be content rather than discontent. And I'm going to do that fanatically from now on, you know.
As long as it is my choice, yes.
And then you've got the definition of somebody who has arrived, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the definition. Someone who's fanatically positive, you know.
Despite all the brainwashings and the signals, yes.
Yeah, and he's done with evil hypnotic suggestions. So Christ, let's say Christ, you could say he was fanatically positive. He had a chance to run away before he was arrested, but he was fanatically positive.
Mm-hmm.
You could make a case that he was fanatic about being positive.
Yes.
And he didn't run away. In fact, while he was on the cross, he even said, "Forgive them, Father, forgive them. They don't know what the hell they're doing." You know?
They haven't figured it out yet. Can't really hold them responsible.
Yeah. So there's an example. Someone can make a case that he was a fanatic or that he was Christ. You know,
uh-huh.
Or that he was a fanatic.
And I'm going to go ahead and go along with the idea that he was the Christ.
Okay. So you're going to go that direction, aren't you?
I am going to go that direction.
You're going to make your choice.
As long as I have a choice to be made, that's the direction I'm going to choose.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And is that going to hurt you? You know.
Well, it might be scary to make the choice.
Yeah.
But now that I've made the choice, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
And yeah.
Therein lies happiness.
This could ruin all your discontented tendencies.
All right.